welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. The Dodgers, after a full season, went 106-56, winning the NL West by 21 games after going 8-1 in the week and a half since you and I have recorded. Eric Steven, how are you doing?
Very good. It's weird. We our last episode we recorded a few days early, and I will say this: it was great having last Monday off. But I was also like, wait, I feel like I should be doing something, and then like it was such an odd week, like very weird.
As of like 20-ish minutes ago, we found out for sure the Dodgers will be playing the Washington Nationals. I almost called them the Expos, but I won't, even though. My favorite logo in sports. So we're going to preview that series as best as we can. We just found out, so our opposition research is a little low. Talk about the last week and a half and kind of look at the playoffs ahead. All that after this.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
So I know our listeners are eager for us to talk playoff baseball. You and I are eager to talk about it. But we do need to kind of go over the week ahead, or excuse me, the week before, week and a half before. We recorded right before the Rockies series, right before I flew out. I was present for three of these games, including two victories, Eric.
And I would say two historic moments.
Okay. I know one, which is at some point, on air, I believe, because my mom brought this up. I was at the game with my mother, went upstairs to get a beer with a friend. You were going to come out to visit me. And as you you were walking up, and Hyunjin Ryu hit a home run.
And so I did not see it live. It was on the reserve section. And the way the seats are there is all the concessions are behind the seats. So you're like, unless there's a TV, you really can't, or you happen to be walking past a tunnel, you can't really see the field. So I'm sort of walking behind there, and the crowd, I know Ryu's batting. It's a scoreless game at this point, and like, I hear the crowd cheering, like, oh, look, he must have got a hit. Then it just started getting really loud, and then it got like euphorically loud, like literally within, I'm like 10 feet from you at this point. And I was like, did he just homer?
No, you and said what happened.
missed it. Yeah, and then I looked over and I saw that there's like a few TVs around the concessions area, and Ryu's like rounding the bases. It was unreal. The call, there's Joe Davis's call where he's like, his voice like cracked, and he goes, "It happened." I think he said it twice, and then the Korean call was fantastic. They're going crazy. We had a good time.
The best part of the Joe Davis call is you can hear the high-fiving if you listen closely enough after the call of everyone in the booth clapping. But it was especially sweet, as I was mentioning, because I got back to my seat. My mother mentioned, didn't Eric predict this wouldn't happen and you thought it would? We didn't have time to find where we said that. I have an idea, so I'm going to be looking it up probably in the offseason just to show you how much of a fool you were, Eric.
Oh, there's no question. And like I was saying, I don't remember exactly what I said, but I know in my heart, I know I was very dismissive. Like, of course he's not going to home run. He's a terrible hitter. Like, there's no way. There's just no way. Like, I was thinking you're an idiot for asking, probably. And then, so I am the fool in this case, but that was a fun little moment.
I appreciate you tweeting out that two pitcher home runs this year, I was present for both, so...
Yeah, Walker Buehler in St. Louis in April, and then Ryu on that Sunday. The other historic moment I was going to mention is you saw Rich Hill hitting a double.
Yeah, I'm not sure because he rakes, man. That's just par for the course.
Except for the fact that like his knee is held together like
I
by,
do
like,
love
a,
how
like duct tape and gum right
Dave
now.
Dave Roberts interviewed after mentioned that he was not supposed to swing at all.
Yeah, like he wasn't allowed to swing, and he still swung and just absolutely crushed the ball into the corner, which was hilarious. Like you can see,
Dodgers went. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say they showed they panned over to Dave Roberts in the dugout after that double, and he has this like big smirk on his face, like you've got to be kidding me, right? Like it was really good.
Since we recorded, Dodgers went 8-1. I was at the loss, so I feel a little classic. Vindicated that the curse lasted as long as it did, but finally broke. Saw a win both the game that Ryu homered in against the Rockies, and then one of the games in San Diego, the Rich Hill game. So some interesting, like, it's interesting. The Dodgers historically, like, we've always had to beat the drum of how you do in September doesn't actually matter. Momentum is dumb, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's not bad to have. It doesn't hurt to end as strongly as the Dodgers did.
Right. Like, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, winning is never bad, but it's not like it's still they have to do something in October for it to, like, matter. But it's just funny, like, given all the sort of the hand-wringing, the Players' Weekend was, like, the last weekend of August. There was still a few days left in the month after that series. But the feeling after that series was like, oh, man, you know, just from a – maybe not the team. I don't think the team felt this way, but it just felt like, man, that was a relatively big series. Not meaningful in, like, a standings type of a way. But, like, it felt like, man, the Yankees really sort of handled the Dodgers pretty easily that weekend. And then they came back and they're, like, 18 – and the Dodgers were 18-6 in September. And they ended up passing the Yankees again. Both the Astros and Yankees had passed the Dodgers in record. So the last few weeks they were sort of going neck and neck to try to figure out home field advantage. In the last week, the Dodgers clinched home field in the National League. So they have home field if they're still alive through the NLCS. And then if they get to the World Series, the Dodgers have home field against everybody but the Astros. So the Twins won 100 games. The Yankees won, I think, did they win 104 or 105? I think they won 105. So it was like they won 105, Dodgers 106, and the Astros 107. Crazy win totals this year, but that's sort of where we're at. The other thing I wanted to mention was in the Ryu home run game, Cody Bellinger also hit a grand slam.
I was about to say, we screwed up. The final time we have to do this, and we missed the Cody Bellinger pace update. So we need to...
Well, the thing is, it's not a pace anymore. That's why equilibrium is thrown off.
We know.
It's a Cody Bellinger summary update.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So he ended the year with 47 home runs, third all-time in Dodger history. Sean Green, 49. Beltre, 48. And Bellinger, 47. He scored 121 runs, which is the fourth time a LA Dodger has scored 120. And so he ended up leading the league with 351 total bases. He led the league in Fangraphs WAR. He was at 9.0. The Fangraphs version, he was at 7.8. Which also led the league tied with Christian Yelich. So it's one of those things we talk about, like, both there's different defenses used. It's not meant to be an exact number. Like, you can't say if, like, for instance, you know, if it was like 7.8 to 7.7 or something, you can't say one guy's definitively better than the other. So impressive that Yelich was able to do that despite missing the last 3 weeks. He had a fantastic year. And I think we talked about this, probably would have won MVP going away, not going away, but, you know, would have been the favorite had he stayed healthy. You know, so, but as I think Bellinger's going to win MVP, he's got a lot, he had the sort of the narrative on his side in terms of able to finish the season, does all things well. Yelich was a fantastic base runner in his own right and sort of mitigated some of the defensive deficiencies he had compared to Bellinger and was also a better hitter. But I think the playing time gap will end up helping Bellinger. Bellinger had 80 more plate appearances than Yelich, so that's huge, even though Yelich's production on a per-game basis was better. So it's going to be an interesting vote, but there's plenty of time between now and then.
Last week and a half, Dodgers largely tinkering, kind of figuring out what the playoff score roster are going to be. What did we learn about this? I know some things we might wait until we talk about the playoffs ahead, but I think the differences between when you and I talked that I noticed, one, Rich Hill seems to be healthy enough. I think when you and I recorded, I just assumed no way he makes this roster.
Right. So you saw the second of his three starts and the first one after the Baltimore game where he left with a knee injury. And there's been concern about that knee. Like, is he going to be healthy enough? Like, what's he going to, you know, what can he do? And we saw, like, so that first game back against Baltimore, if you remember, he struck out the first two batters, mm-hmm. and the ball was just dancing, right? Like, when Rich Hill has the curveball going, it looks pretty sweet, right? It's fun to watch. Like, it's a fun pitch. But then, like, that's when his knee gave out, like, on the second strikeout. And then he went, like, walk. I forgot the order, but it was two walks and two hit-by-pitches. And he ended up giving up a run, and he had to leave. And then, so there was a lot of concern about what's he going to do with his knee. So the last two starts, he was feeling so healthy that he pitched an inning after each start in the bullpen like it was a spring training game, which was fun. So the start you saw, two innings against San Diego, no hits, two walks, five strikeouts. And then against the Giants on the final game of the year, three innings, one hit, two walks, four strikeouts. So he ended up with five innings, nine strikeouts, four walks, and a single allowed. So, like, very sharp. Dave Roberts, we had a meeting the Tuesday night when we're recording this. We recorded basically, like, I would say, what, less than a half hour, or maybe a half hour after the wild card game ended, something like that. So while the wild card game was going on, the Dodgers held a workout at Dodger Stadium. And Dave Roberts spoke to the media. We didn't get to talk to the players much, at all. We might tomorrow, but there weren't really like any much of like a roster revelation. We'll talk about this in a second. But Roberts wouldn't commit to like any of the order of his first three starters. The one thing he did say was that he was carrying 12 pitchers. He said eight relievers, but we got him to sort of drill down a little bit. And the reason he mentioned eight relievers is because he has a distinct game four starter. And as we sort of expected, if healthy, it's Rich Hill. So Rich Hill is going to start game four if the series goes that far. And Dave Roberts said, we're confident he can go four innings. So like it's really is like a spring training thing. He went two innings plus a bullpen, three innings plus a bullpen. Now he's going to be ready to sort of go four innings and they'll figure it out from there. If you want, like, the snark, you could be snarky and say, well, then that's just like a normal Rich Hill postseason start. You know, Dave Roberts is going to have a quick hook or whatever. We'll see. As of the rest of the roster, like, it's pretty much, like, we talked about this in the roster sort of preview. It's going to be 13 position players. Dave Roberts mentioned Gavin Lux specifically was going to be on it. He's starting, you know, he's the starting second baseman. This is not, like, a news thing. He might not start against the lefties, but which includes Patrick Corbin in game one, but he's going to be starting against every right-hander and maybe some lefties, we'll see. He mentioned Matt Beatty as well. So it's basically the 13 position players we thought. Now the only question is, who are the eight relievers? And I would say we had a pretty good handle on it. It came down at the end to, was Hill going to be healthy? Check that box, he is. So now it's a matter of, like, we had Gonsolin in our mm-hmm. selection, but now it's like, did Dustin May pitch in any of the games you saw?
Yes. He came in one of the Colorado games.
Yeah. So he's been, excellent down the stretch, he never pitched in relief before. He famously gave up a grand slam in his first, relief outing earlier this year. To my brother's chagrin, I believe the text from one of my brothers was, Dustin May is a starter, period. And I had to remind them that, hey, it's August 18th. There's still 6 weeks left in the season. That's why they're doing this now, to sort of get him acclimated. He gave up three runs in his next relief outing. And ever since then, lights out. And not only that, it's been like some pretty good leverage spots. But his last eight relief appearances, 10 innings, five hits, no runs, one walk, 14 strikeouts. And he's like been carving people up. So he gave up a double. So it's four singles and a double. That's all he's given up, and a walk. So he's looked pretty dominant. I think he pitched his way on. Roberts did say tonight, the roster's set. the players know. They are just not willing to sort of reveal it. They don't have to reveal it till 10 a.m. On Thursday, which is the date of game one. I guess so. We do have some actual. There was some contingent like starting times based on who the Dodgers were going to face. I think if they had faced the Nationals, it would have been an hour earlier in game one. But now, say that again.
So I thought it was if they would play the Brewery, it would have been an hour later. But now that's the Nationals, it is the earlier 5 p.m. local start. Is that or 5
oh, right.
or 7 or whatever.
Exactly. It's,
the yeah, Nationals see, won, Eric.
You're right. See, I just confused myself because as I'm driving home, I was thinking about the schedule.
Right.
Because
and, the Brewers looked good.
The Brewers led the game 3-0. It was 3-1 in the eighth as I'm driving home. And then like there was a controversial like hit by pitch that could have been a foul ball. And then it like a Hader just sort of imploded and then an error. I feel bad for the Brewers because they lost Christian Yelich on September 10th. Right. And they went 14-2 without him to clinch a playoff spot. They actually had a chance to win the division in the last week of the season, but they got swept by the Rockies of all teams. But even with that sweep, 20-7 in September, which is ridiculous. 14-5 without Yelich, even though because they lost those last three. But just what a brutal gut punch way to lose. But I was going to say, but Trent Grisham in right field, he's been hitting well. He's a rookie. He's been the guy who's gotten the most playing time with Yelich down. But he had the sort of the error that allowed the winning run to score in that it was a Juan Soto like 2-run single. It became a 3-run play because of that because it was bases loaded. So that's a gut punch. They lost their last two games by walk off in Colorado. And then they lose in the last at bat in the eighth inning tonight. So that is for as hot as they were, it just shows you like how crazy the postseason is. It could turn on a dime and gut punch, and they're done. So rough for them. But yeah, so getting back to this game time, Dodgers are in fact playing the Nationals, even though I'm trying to convince myself otherwise. Thursday's game one, 5:37 Pacific time. Game two is 6:37 Pacific time. I always like this. Had the Brewers won, game two was going to be 10 minutes later. So I have no idea why. Like, it's in the same stadium. Like, it's very odd. MLB's fun.
Get there early for your Cody Bellinger bobblehead day on game
one. On Thursday, yeah.
That's weird, right?
I think part of it is like
we've seen this 5:37 start on a Thursday.
Right. Well, we've seen this like, the Dodgers will probably maybe some late push. I don't know what the ticket sold situation is, but we've seen that like you saw that with the Braves, like they went to 14th straight asterisk. Division titles because as if 1994 doesn't exist, but we'll give them that one for a second. But they went to all those playoff years, and some of those years, like they weren't selling out the early rounds because, like, their fans were just like, "Yeah, we get it. You went to the playoffs. Like, well, let's wait and see what's happening." Not that I don't think the Dodgers fans are disinterested, but I think especially being on a Thursday, we'll see
at five. But, like, that's just such a tough time to get to.
And well, it's weird too because Thursday's NL only, so. There's only, that's kind of the story though of the postseason. Or like most of your night games think of it as East Coast prime time. So like all the World Series games are basically going to be around five. So like, it's going to be weird. I know they start later on Friday because there's four games, but I think most of the sort of quote unquote night games will be in that 5 to 6 range. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But I think part of that was like this was sort of to ensure that people would buy tickets like to the NLDS opener. But it's going to be weird, too, because it was neat. They have two different bobbleheads. One is Cody Bellinger in a home uniform. One's in a road uniform. I think they're the same design otherwise. But like so depending on where you are and like what box you get, like you could have a different bobblehead. So I think. There's a potential of people like, oh, we got to get two tickets to make sure we get like both bobbleheads or something. So maybe there's something to that.
Well, you and I are going to look at the Nationals, not the Brewers, Eric, ahead. Make sure you get the right notes.
Wait, are you sure? Yeah. Are you sure they're not playing Milwaukee? Okay.
See how they sort of line up against the Dodgers, and then preview a little bit of how the Dodgers are going to look going ahead after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So it's been apparent that the Nationals were going to be one of the wild card teams, almost certainly for a while. And doing so, a lot of the chatter was, oh, geez, I hope the Dodgers, that's who I don't want the Dodgers to face of any of the wild card teams because of the three-headed monster of their starting pitcher, Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin. That's what's going to happen. That's what the Dodgers are going to get. Both Scherzer and Strasburg pitched in game one, in the wild card game, as you mentioned. So, one, how potent is we know they're good, but how good are they, Eric? I think you're going to be able to put some context there. And how do you think games 2, 3, and 4, if necessary, are going to shape up in terms of starting pitchers?
So there's a couple things here. Like, so the Nationals, this does have a lot of like 2017 Diamondbacks all kind of written all over it. There's a few key differences, and I'll get to it, but. The Nationals this year were terrible. Like when they started, they were 19-31, and it was kind of funny because like it seems like forever. Like, and I don't blame it. The team social media crew, like you're just trying to get like your own fans like riled up and stuff. But they had a lot of variants of this tweet of like Nationals best in baseball since May 24th, as if like the season didn't start 2 months prior to that. But they were just red hot for a long time. They faltered a little bit early September, but they had built like a pretty good lead. But the National League we saw was like such a war of attrition for those last two spots. And then like to the point where like Milwaukee like just seized it. Like the Cubs just absolutely collapsed. And then like Joe Maddon got fired. They agreed to not run. Yeah. So fired. Right. And so like, I don't know, like, just a weird thing, but so Nationals now since May 24th, their sort of turnaround date, they are 74-38. That's excellent. That is very good. And like before the season, they were probably like one of like the co-favorites in the National League East, I think, by a lot of projections. So like not a surprise that they played really well. They were tied with the Dodgers in that span. Now you could say the Dodgers have basically not been playing for much since like June because
four for fifth starter. It feels like half a year.
right. So like take this whatever grain of salt you want. Like you can read to it. We mentioned this a lot of times. It really doesn't matter how they play in October. It matters. But like the Dodgers like basically went toe to toe with the Nationals record wise without like I'm not going to say without trying, but it was like there's clearly a level of intensity. Like the Nationals, it was like the Dodgers last year. They were fighting for their playoff lives like the whole time. Like, so the only team that was better than them were the Astros, who were a half game better, 74-37. So like Nationals are playing in the deep end here and doing really well. And if you want to count the wild card game, they technically have a better record than the Dodgers since that fateful May 24th date. But, these teams, so the 2017 Diamondbacks vibe. All right, so if you remember back to the 2017, the Dodgers, like, had such a big lead that year. I think it got to 21 at some point. I know the Dodgers finished this year at 21, but the Dodgers had that historic, like, 16 out of 17 losses. And I think they lost to the Diamondbacks, like, 7 times pretty late. And so all the Diamondbacks, like, as if, like, the lowest I think the Dodgers lead got was maybe 9, something like that.
That
and like
right.
so they were never truly challenged. Like it got to the point where people were so convinced, like nihilistic sort of Dodgers fans were so convinced that they were going to blow the division, like without considering the fact that even just blowing that lead, that 9-game lead or 11 or whenever it was, that would have been historic in its own right. So, like, even as badly as they played, and then they ended up sweeping the Diamondbacks. But part of the reason they swept the Diamondbacks is because they went balls to the wall all out in the wild card game, because it's a game you have to win. So they, that year, the Greinke did not have it. That was a much higher scoring wild card game than this one. Greinke in that game went 3 2/3. He only he threw 58 pitches. Robbie Ray came in to start the fifth, and he went 2 1/3, and he threw 35 pitches. He was their number two starter, and that year, like, owned the Dodgers. I think he had, it was something like 53 strikeouts in 5 starts against them. Just absolutely owned them. This year, Max Scherzer, 5 innings, 77 pitches. He gave up 3 runs early in the first 2 innings. Yasmani Grandal with a 2-run shot in the first, and then Eric Thames hit a home run in the second, and then really didn't give up. He gave up some runners after that, but sort of pitched out of it. Steven Strasburg came in, 3 innings, 34 pitches. He was scoreless. He looked a lot better. So you're basically looking at a situation like the Diamondbacks had a couple years ago, where they had to basically, so that with Greinke going game one, he had to wait till game three, or the wildcard game, he had to wait till game three of the NLDS. Robbie Ray was pitching game two on short rest, and the Dodgers pounded him. But to start things off in that series, the Dodgers pounded Taijuan Walker. They got him for 4 runs in the first inning, and then the series really, like, they didn't really look back after that. Now, I will say this, the Nationals are much better equipped to handle this, in that Patrick Corbin is much, much better than Taijuan Walker.
Especially against the Dodgers.
Right. And so in his career, Patrick Corbin has done really, you know, pretty well against the Dodgers. Like, he faced them so much that he was with the Diamondbacks for so long. 3.36 career ERA, 19 starts, 21 total games. Really good. However, the Dodgers are still, or he has a 5-9 record in those games. So,
score some runs, Arizona.
Doesn't,
or not.
Yeah, didn't get a lot of run support. Now, however, so the last 2 years, though, 5 starts against the Dodgers, 2 total runs allowed.
That's pretty good.
39 strikeouts in 30 1/3 innings. So, doing really well. And somehow, he was still only 2-0 in those games. I didn't look up exactly what happened in the other 3, like, that he got no decisions in, but the fact that he didn't have more wins with that stingy of a performance, like, man, what a brutal, like, run of luck for him. But like I said, that he's, like, much better equipped, very good. So he'll be a formidable opponent. We don't know yet who he's facing in game one for the Dodgers. The interesting thing about that final week, so the Dodgers, they won their last 7 games. They swept the road trip in San Diego and San Francisco, and they only allowed 9 runs in those 6 games. They didn't even allow a home run on the trip, so it was a dominant pitching road trip. Now, the order for the rotation in the last couple weeks of the season was Kershaw, Buehler, then Ryu. Now, a lot of this was Ryu finished very strong. 7 innings in each of his last 3 starts. But part of that was because he looked gassed before that, and he had a 4-start stretch where he was terrible. They skipped one of his starts, so that first, like, 7-inning start back, he was on 9 days rest. Then he pitched another 7 innings on 7 days rest, the game we saw. He actually gave up 3 runs in that game, but the Dodgers' offense was pouring it on. And then in that last game against San Francisco, he was on 5 days rest. So, Ryu looking very sharp. Now, the other wild card here is that Kershaw pitched in relief on Sunday. He had pitched, he started Thursday, went 6 innings. He's pitched in relief a lot. It was his first regular season relief appearance since 2009, but he's pitched in the playoffs a number of times in relief in recent years. So part of it was that. Part of it was getting ready for that. Part of it was, like, Dave Roberts, I think he said today that Kershaw requested to sort of get him. I guess I remember how they termed it. I think it was an aggressive bullpen, essentially, like a bullpen session, a side session with stakes. Now, this is only, I mean, probably basing it a little too much off this. After the game, Kershaw told David Basse that you know, he said something like, it's a good reset. To start my 5-day clock, or I forgot, he didn't exactly say that, but he mentioned like 5 days. So in my head, I'm thinking he did that Sunday to get ready for Friday start, which is game two. Now then it becomes a question of who starts game one, who starts game three. We've talked about this a lot over the course of the season on pure talent, pure stuff. Walker Buehler's like clearly the Dodgers' best pitcher. So wouldn't be out of the question for them to start him in game one. If you reward the season that Ryu had, he led the league in ERA. I think Jacob DeGrom is going to probably win the Cy Young. He has some of the peripheral advantages over Ryu, more innings, more strikeouts, etc. But given his strong start, like you could reward Ryu with the game one start and go Ryu, Kershaw, Buehler. We talked about Buehler being the most volatile of the three in that he has the most bad games, but he has also the most dominating as well. So like there's a give or take there. Now the rest factor is if they want to keep sort of Ryu on this long rest period. If he starts game one, he would start game five on
5 days rest.
On 5 days rest. Yeah, so that's extra rest. It's fine. So it's not out of the question that it's going to be. It could be Ryu, Kershaw, Buehler. But if they want to full on like make sure he's completely rested, you could go Buehler, Kershaw, Ryu, and then if Ryu's your game three guy, he wouldn't pitch again in the series. So and then depending on how the series shakes out, he could either be ready to go like in game one of the NLCS should they advance, or you can depending on who else is available, you could push him back to a game two, and you sort of keep kicking the can down and giving him more like. More of these like 6 and 7 day rest starts, if you can. You can always, you know, the postseason will dictate what you could do, but I think that's a possibility. But like, so I would just say this in my weekend review, I always put like the upcoming schedule, and a lot of times the pitch rotation is just a guess, especially sometimes this year with the Dodgers where they've been kind of in flux, I'll say. But the way I put it in the weekend review, I think it's going to be Ryu, Kershaw, then Buehler. However, it wouldn't surprise me if Buehler's the game one starter. So, like, we'll find out. Like, you might, they're not going to probably announce anything till Thursday morning. And this podcast should be out before that. So, this could be all moot by then. But there's some basic, like, that's sort of the equation right now.
Looping back to the National starting pitching, Corbin's going game one. He's really good against the Dodgers. Sort of established that. Do you think that the Nationals are going to kind of copy that Diamondbacks formula you mentioned, where in this case Strasburg, who came on in relief, goes game two and then Scherzer goes game three?
I think so. One, because Strasburg was awesome. Like he mm-hmm. pitched three innings. I think he gave up a hit and 34 pitches. So like I think that's doable to go on what would technically be short rest, but you know, I think that's something they could definitely do. Like the Nationals in a way are a more extreme example of the Dodgers in that their pitching is very consolidated in their top three guys, their starters basically. If you look at relief, the Nationals were 29th in relief ERA.
I think the Dodgers bullpen is bad.
Yeah, 568. And then you know the Dodgers ended up 5th in in relief ERA. What a weird year. I think it really like shows you what the Nationals sort of had to do in this like winner take all thing, you know, to sort of get by. So I'm looking at, I just wanted to double check because, you know, ERA is one thing and I don't know, I just wanted to check FIP here and the Nationals there are 26th in the majors at 494. The Dodgers are 6th at 406. So bullpens are bad. Like they're just bad. Like the best bullpen FIP is 392 by the Twins. There's three teams that have a sub-4 FIP in their bullpen. And so like it's just bad. They're all bad. So I don't know. But yeah, so I think I would imagine it's still going to be like Strasburg 2, Scherzer 3. They haven't announced anything yet outside of Corbin in Game 1, so we don't really know. I will say this about Scherzer. He missed about 4 weeks. He started once after the All-Star break. He missed it a little bit around there, too. Came back for one start, then missed about 4 weeks. His first 20 starts of the year, 2.41 ERA, 10 home runs allowed. Only a 3.41 slugging against. His last seven starts, and I'm not even including the wildcard game, 4.74 ERA, 4.73 slugging, and 8 home runs. So almost as many home runs in about a third of the starts. And he actually, if you count the two tonight, that's 10 home runs and 8 starts after 10 home runs in his first 20 starts. So a bit of a different pitcher. Not sure what the story is there. So while still very, very good, like maybe hittable, more hittable than a normal sort of Max Scherzer might be. So that's something to look forward to or look to and just to see sort of a difference maker. If you look at offense between the two teams, the Dodgers are fourth in WRC plus at 111. That's the best in the National League. The Nats are actually pretty good. They're eighth at 103, and that's the third best in the National League. So pretty good offenses. But yeah, it's just going to be like teams that rely heavily on their starters. But with the Nationals, they don't have – or their relievers have not pitched very well. So it's in much worse shape than the Dodgers are in that case.
We're going to talk a little bit about how the teams have matched up so far this year and kind of sum up where we think Dustin May fits into this rotation. And then the final five questions from Craig of the pre-playoff edition, at least after this. You know, we wanted to talk a little bit about the offenses, and then you and I talked a little bit while we were on commercial break. We don't have a lot there. Both pretty good offenses. Dodgers probably a little deeper, probably a little bit better. Dodgers definitely one of the best offenses in baseball this year. So I think you had mentioned before, I guess, and we'll kind of, you know what? Let's talk into that. Let's talk about Dustin May. And this plays into the Nationals offense. They don't have a lot of lefties. And so, right. And so we were wondering, do they not bring in left-handed specialist Kolarik on the roster to fit May in? No, I don't think so, but I think that's certainly a possibility.
Yeah, that's in play. Like you just figure like their main lefties are Juan Soto and Adam Eaton. Gerardo Parra has played a lot, but he's slumped mightily like the last 2 months. I know he had the baby shark thing and everyone loves him there, but really not that good of a hitter. So are you really that concerned about bringing a lefty in to face him? Maybe. They also have Matt Adams, but like, unless Kershaw comes in to hang a curveball to him or something, that I don't know if you have to worry about it. He has not had a good year. So yeah, that's a possibility. Now, the other thing is like, it could just be a direct rookie on rookie battle of, like Rich Hill being like healthy ish. Eliminates or at least lessens the need of another long guy. So maybe it's May taking Gonsolin's spot because Gonsolin was going to be like the 2 to 3 inning relief guy. Ross Stripling is also that guy. I would say the way Don Mattingly, the way Dave Roberts says, I'm off tonight, man. This is weird. The way Dave Roberts has talked about Ross Stripling, I think multiple times in the last couple weeks, he's mentioned Ross Stripling as being on the playoff roster, like in a definitive sense. He hasn't talked that way about Gonsolin. So I think it's more likely that May would take Gonsolin's spot over Stripling.
It's sort of where I'm thinking.
And so during the sort of Q&A today where Roberts didn't give up a lot of information, he did say Lux was going to be on. We talked about this. He mentioned like Adam Kolarik, like just in passing, not in terms of like it wasn't like who's going to be on the roster, but just in talking about different roles and stuff. And he said, yeah, he's our lefty specialist. So I think in that that's what he is. Like they want that safety blanket and he's going to be there. So I, even though the Nationals might not have a ton of lefties, like I think Kolarik is still on. So I think it really is down to May taking Gonsolin's spot or Stripling. Because it's one of those things, like they could say all they want, but until they submit the final roster, like it doesn't really matter. So, but I think it'll be May over Gonsolin is how I would sort of characterize it at this point.
Okay, So moving back to the National Series, so I figured that was a good time to kind of get out of the way. The Dodgers won the season series against the Nationals 4-3. Kind of some close games there. Patrick Corbin played a role in one of them for sure. I know you have
scoreless
some...
against them. Yeah.
I know you have some notes for us on the season series and how it looked and how it might spell what the playoffs will look like.
Okay, so the two teams split in May at Dodger Stadium, and this was when the Nationals were terrible. So, like, that was a bad split by the Dodgers in that thing. Ryu won a game in that series. Kershaw did not pitch. Kershaw, the Dodgers won 2 of 3 in just after the All-Star break in D.C. Kershaw won a game in that. Ryu won a game in that series as well. So they're, you know, Ryu was 2-0 against them. Now, Buehler lost one of the games in L.A., and he lost one of the games in D.C. If you look at it, like, both teams can sort of say, look, our big three starters did okay. Like, the Dodgers' big three were I only quickly looked this up. I'm not attributing the loss to any pitcher. I'm just, like, looking at who started what game. But both Buehler starts, the Dodgers lost. But the Dodgers were 3-0 in the Ryu Kershaw start, so 3-2 from the big three. Whereas the Nationals were they were 3-1 in their starts by their big three. Strasburg beat Buehler in D.C. Scherzer beat Buehler in L.A. Strasburg lost to Ryu in L.A. and Corbin won, but that was against Rich Hill. So. The only, like, big three on big three matchups were there were three of them. Scherzer over Buehler in L.A., Ryu over Strasburg in L.A., and then Strasburg over Buehler in D.C. So the others were, as it happens a lot in the regular season, you don't always match up, like number one versus number one, stuff like that. So that's how it sort of shakes out. But, yeah, so a lot of mixing and matching, but I think both sides can say, our pitchers did okay. Buehler had the two losses. And now I will say this. I don't think that's a reason that Buehler would start game three. In fact, Dave Roberts said, because we talked to him before the Brewers were leading the wildcard game as we were talking to Dave Roberts, and he said the roster was already set and it didn't matter who won the wildcard game. So, like, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, man, Buehler lost twice to the Nationals. We really have to avoid him. I think they're very confident in Walker Buehler at this point. So I don't think that matters a ton. But that's just sort of where we're at. So, yeah, Dodgers won the season series 4-3. And, yeah, so they'll get the first two games at home Thursday, Friday. We don't have any start times for the other games yet. I would imagine those will come out later in the week, but that's sort of how it goes in this early going.
Now, before we get to 5 questions from Craig, I know you wanted to talk about the shift.
Oh, yeah.
Specifically, how the Dodgers and Nationals use it drastically differently.
So Inside Edge tweeted out something the other day, or I think CJ Nitkowski shared it. They're like a scouting service that has a bunch of cool stats a lot. And they tracked the shifts by eyeball. So it wasn't like a StatCast thing, but you know, they actually have people at the games and, like, chronicling things, like, you know, if someone used 4 outfielders or if they moved in infielders over to one side. Let's look at this. So the Dodgers use the most shifts in baseball. The Nationals use the least amount of shifts in baseball. So you have an interesting sort of dichotomy there. Now, I didn't have an idea of what the actual numbers were. How many shifts do you think the Dodgers use the entire season? 162 games.
Uh-huh.
So just give me a number of how many shifts they use.
You're going to make me do math. Okay, so 162 mm-hmm. games, and how many times do I think the Dodgers shifted a game? I am going to guess, probably incorrectly. Man, I'm going to guess they did it like 10 times-ish a game, so 1,600.
That's a good, like, guess, right? Like, that's a logical guess. However, they did almost double that. they shifted 3,083 times. The only other team that went over 3,000 were the Orioles, and clearly they were good. So now, the Nationals shifted 1,018 times. So the Dodgers shifted three times as often as the Nationals. If you look at it, the Dodgers did it 19 times a game. That's like, it's kind of crazy. In fact, I'm just going to look really quickly. Dodgers pitchers, you only face like a certain amount. I think that's over half their plate appearances. Yeah, they faced 5,913 batters. So at slightly over half of their batters' face, they shifted. And like, if you look at some of the other thing, I think Fielding Bible, or maybe it's Sports Info Solutions, who puts out like the defensive runs saved. The Dodgers led the team category in that this year. They really do use shifts to their advantage. So another thing in this inside edge, the Dodgers actually they prevented 149 hits. They also gave away 99 hits, like hits that go through a vacated spot. So their net was 50 hits that they took away over the course of a season. The net is what they took away. That's tied for fourth most. The Nationals, they only prevented 42 hits. They gave away 34 hits by the shift. So even in all that, like, so their net was 8 hits saved. So kind of negligible. So it's going to be interesting. Like, that's a huge, like, almost philosophical shift. I can't believe I used that word. So like, they just have different mindsets. I mean, it'd be interesting to sort of talk to the two teams about that, like why the Nationals don't shift as much, because I think that's how the game is clearly trending. But like, you know, I think a lot of it is like, we saw this with Kershaw a little bit over the years, where he's pretty stubborn and he doesn't like all the nonsense behind him, or he just wants to sort of be like kind of a normal view, or sort of messes with his concentration. I don't know if this is the case with the Nationals, but I could totally see Scherzer especially, you know, being like, what the hell are you doing back there? You know, like, don't, you know, stop shifting. And then, you know, someone like Strasburg and Corbin, good enough to be like, hey, maybe don't shift as much because it messes my concentration up or something. Interested to find out about this. I hope to during the series, but that's interesting to me. So that's sort of the one of the biggest differences, I think, between the two teams.
And real quick before we get to the questions from Craig, how do you think the series is going to go? I want a prediction from you, Eric.
Prediction? Pain. So I think I would have picked the Dodgers over the Nationals anyway, even if like everything worked out beautifully and like Strasburg didn't have to pitch in the wild card game and he was going to be game one and then Corbin game two or whatever. But I think that just gives an extra bump to the Dodgers that he had to be used tonight. So I think they're going to win in four games. I think we'll get a chance to see Rich Hill on the mound in the series, and he'll be on the mound not to close it out, because he probably won't even get the win, because he probably won't go five. But I think the Dodgers close it out in game four on the road.
Get the brooms out.
Well,
there you go. For the Dodgers.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know we're back recording what would be game four. I told you.
Yeah. No, exactly. I was going to say you could have doubled your chances of like gloating at that point. But I told you that it was going to be a sweep.
What
the Dodgers
you think
lost,
I
but yeah. Exactly.
So. All right. Five questions. Oh, we have the ditty. I'd go do the ditty. So it's time for
questions from Craig.
The last regular season questions. I guess we should bring this up now. You and I were recording shorter episodes more frequently throughout the time that the Dodgers are in the playoffs. Exact schedule, we don't know. Probably recording on the off days, and then our editor will get them up as soon as possible, and we'll kind of wean it from there. Don't know if we'll get questions from Craig. Maybe in between series, we'll have to see. But for now, here are the five final regular season questions.
And before you ask number one, I will say, I will do my best to know who the Dodgers are playing
and who their manager is.
And
it's Brady Little, Eric. Come on,
that's right, exactly.
First one's a two-parter. There are currently six manager positions to be filled this offseason. Not the Dodgers nor the Marlins are on that list. Which team will make their hire first? Pittsburgh, the Cubs, San Diego, San Francisco, the Angels, or the Royals? Or will be another team altogether, like the Mets or the Phillies? And of the managers who just got let go, will any of them take these now open slots?
So a lot of the speculation right now is that Joe Maddon is going to end up with the Angels. As he was the bench coach there for a long time or on the coaching staff and has a history there. It's weird because the Angels, they have a good amount of talent. They're really short on pitching.
It should be like this attractive position, right? You have the best player in baseball. You have Shohei Ohtani. It's Southern California. It should be this kind of attractive position, but
and he has a history there, and so the things that sort of put it in that category for me is that the other sort of rumor that people like to mention is that he'll go to the Padres, Joe Maddon, but they paid $300 million for Manny Machado. I'm not saying they're cheap. They paid $144 million for Eric Hosmer. They even signed Will Myers to an $80 million contract. So they're not cheap, but they like Joe Maddon was, I think he was making $5 or $6 million a year. Mm-hmm. He's a big money manager. I don't know. Like they have to pay Andy Green for two more years. That's what he had on his contract. He got an extension before Dave Roberts did because the only thing is, like, the Padres chairman the other day was like basically saying, like, this season sucked, like, we were terrible. Like, and so I think it's one of those, like, I don't know if this is like, hey, AJ Preller, you have to actually win now instead of, hey, look at this, we have a great young future. So I don't know if that pressures them to do more. But I always, in my head, I have a hard time like seeing San Diego sort of making that move. It's a better fit baseball wise. It would be great, I think, if he went there. It's hard to say, because are they really going to be like juggernauts? Like yet they have good young pitching, but they still need for them to contend next year, they need to add, they would need to like either one of the teams Joe Maddon joins, like needs their team to sign Garrett Cole. Like if it's the Padres or if it's the Angels, like that's what he needs more than anything. But I think Joe Maddon goes somewhere. I think it'll be the Angels. I think Artie Moreno is more likely to pay Joe Maddon. Also, the Brad Ausmus firing seemed like a last minute, or like not last minute, but like a very like, oh, all of a sudden, like, yeah, we need to get rid of Brad Ausmus after just 1 year. He has 2 years left on his contract. I don't think they make that move unless they have something they're already in the hopper, whether it's Maddon or something else, or they have a good idea of what they want to do. It seemed like, because that's how sort of Maddon got the job in Chicago. Renteria was the manager there, Rick Renteria, and he had a little bit left on his contract, but they like fired him too. Because, hey, Joe Maddon's available all of a sudden. So that's what kind of happens sometimes. So I think the timing of that makes Maddon more likely to go to Anaheim. But I think it's he'll be in Southern California one way or the other, one of those two teams. I will say the Angels act first and Maddon acts first, too.
The Cubs act first, getting Joe Girardi.
I could see that. But you got to remember, too, like there's going to be off days in the playoffs. But for the most part, there might not be a ton of news.
In his original question, like knowing this probably isn't going to happen until after the World Series. Maybe a leak happens, but probably no official announcements till the World Series is done.
Yeah.
Will Cody Bellinger win a Gold Glove as an outfielder this season?
Yes.
Yes. Also, will Corey Seager be a finalist for the Player's Choice Comeback Player of the Year? That has a lot of words in the National League.
I mean, I guess, yes. I mean, I haven't looked at it. But Comeback of the Year is always weird. Like, he fits the profile more than most in that he's actually coming back from an injury.
It seems like.
I don't like it. Corey Seager, he ended up, he doubled on the last day. So he ended with 44 doubles, tied with Anthony Rendon for the most in the National League. He's the second L.A. Dodger to lead the league in doubles. Wes Parker did it in 1970. I will say, like, I don't like it when players win the Comeback Player of the Year award after just being better from sucking. Like, that's like the worst Comeback Player of the Year. It's like, oh man, what, he came back from such adversity from being terrible. Like, that's not a comeback to me. A comeback is like actually overcoming something. Like, I think, like, in the, I guess, like, someone like in the American League, Carlos Carrasco, who overcame leukemia to finally pitch near the end of the season. I don't think he did enough on the field to do it, but just that story, the fact that he came back in season, that's cool as hell. So, like, someone like that, maybe that makes him the comeback player next year or something. I don't know. But that's the kind of, like, comeback story you rally around, that kind of a thing. So I think Seager fits the bill perfectly. I haven't looked at this at all, but I will say, since they named three finalists, sure.
Why not? Who gets the first DS pinch hit by a Dodger? One of us gets David Freese, and the other gets the field, the rest of the team.
Okay, so the wild card here is that Patrick Corbin going game one.
Well, I was about to say, David Freese will be starting game one.
Yeah, so. I would bet money he's starting at first, and Gavin Lux is not starting, and Max Muncy's at second. So that also means at some point, either like Jock Peterson or Gavin Lux is going to pinch hit for David Freese. How are we going to do this? I will say... I have dibs. I'm going to go with Jock.
Okay. I was going to go with Matt Beattie.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's going to be his role. He's not going to really start. So he's going to basically get a pinch hit every game, you know, most games.
He seems to me to be the guy that... Exactly what you said. He is our pinch hitter who we don't feel is going to come into the game afterwards, whereas I feel like maybe David Freese hits that role, depending on how they think the bullpen, the Nationals are going to be using their bullpen. But I think a lot of the guys on the bench are going to be in there to kind of replace platoons. So
I'm not feeling good about my pick, only because it has to happen in game one, because it's all right-handed starters after that until like game five, I guess. Peterson is like, oh man, this is going to be tough. Yeah.
This season, three Dodger pitchers, Walker Buehler, Hyunjin Ryu, and Russell Martin, homered in a game.
Classic. All right.
The most in LA Dodger history is five pitchers in a season. So the trivia question for you, Eric, is name those five. I will give you the year. It was 2002.
Okay, so...
Now, I want to let you know that I did this myself. I guessed two names. I got both right. And I'm upset at myself because I wussed out. Had I guessed for three, maybe even four, the first two names I think I would have gone with also on this list. So
I can't remember when exactly Darren Dreyfuss crapped out, but I'm not going to guess him yet.
Okay.
I will go weirdly. My first rando guess is Odalys Perez. I don't even know if he homered.
He is on the list.
Okay. They still had Kevin Brown. They didn't do the Jeff Weaver trade yet. Mm-hmm. Did they have Nomo in 2002, or did they get him? Oh, he sucked as a hitter, so no. Wow, I'm talking myself in and out of everything on this. Okay, so I don't remember exactly when Darren Dreyfuss last year is, but I have to guess him if he's available.
Okay.
So I'll guess him.
Nope.
Damn it.
On the Darren Dreyfuss, he was my wrong guess. I guessed three names, and he was the one that I did guess and was wrong about.
So the only other... Oh. Okay. Okay, so 2002, that was Gagne's first year as relief, so he wasn't starting. Not that he was a home run hitter. I just was thinking randomly. This is fun. let's say, I'm just going to say Kevin Brown, since he probably started a ton.
He was my first guess, and he hit a home run.
Nice. Who were the other three then? Because I have no idea.
So I was laughing a lot when you were talking about Nomo, because your train of thought was my exact train of thought why I did not guess him. I'm like, was he still on the team? Yeah, maybe he was. No, he was a really bad hitter. No way. So I pulled back that guess, but he was one of the home run hitters.
Wow.
Omar Dahl hit a home run.
Oh, God, that's perfect.
And then I was really proud of this guess for being, for one, me guessing it, and two, it being correct. Andy Ashby.
Wow. All right. you get all the kudos for that one. Right. I hope Matt Beatty gets the first pinch hit now.
Thanks, buddy.
Yep.
The next full podcast episode will be at or just after Halloween, probably. Between playoff series, you and I now and then do a full episode, but they might be shorter still because we'll be going rapid fire. So for in honor of Halloween, Craig has a candy question for us. Which of these would you choose first? Jolly Rancher, Lifesavers, or Dum Dums?
To eat? Or to...
What else are you... I don't want to know.
Okay, it has to be Jolly Rancher. Go ahead.
I think I agreed. What's interesting? One, can we just? I wonder if you can. We can, Lifesavers are bottom tier here, right? They're pretty bad.
No,
I love the wintergreen Lifesavers, but the fruit ones off.
Well, I will say this. So, I guess they technically can be bottom tier, although. I have no use for Dum Dums. I'm not a ball detective. I don't need a lollipop.
They're delicious.
So,
were delicious. But I was going to say this: like both of these candies, I remember Dum Dums and Jolly Ranchers loving as a kid. Outside of the green apple flavor, which is disgusting.
I kind of like it.
You're weird.
I am weird.
But now that I think about it, I'm like, I don't want either of these. They sound so sweet and syrupy, and I'm done.
Yes. Now, I think what the real answer is, I still think it's Jolly Ranchers, but if I'm being honest, it's probably, if you go gummy Lifesavers.
Oh, sure. That's
different. Those are great. Those are great. But it's,
I'm not counting that.
And first of all, if you give away wintergreen Lifesavers as a trick or treat, your house should be egged.
Which is really, I remember loving the wintergreen ones as a kid. So I was
like,
the oddball.
I'm a mint guy. Like, of course, I'll use them. But if you can't be given, you might as well give pennies or or
the wax crap. Lips.
Yeah, exactly. That's a terrible candy. Yeah. Ah, God.
Whenever we'll do, maybe Craig will just send us 5 Halloween candy questions, just different tiers.
We could riff on which have you tried the Reese's peanut butter cups with Reese's pieces inside?
I haven't tried it yet. It looks good. Is it good?
It's a lot. we might have to do an on air taste test to do it. So we'll see. I don't want to infringe on the Doughboys podcast. So,
well, that's our look. We'll be back between games 2 and 3. Somehow, some way, it'll probably be a quick episode, but we'll talk about 2 Dodger victories and we'll argue on whether they'll win game 3 or 4.
Right, exactly. Well, I already predicted in 4, so I'm sticking with that no matter what. Fair. Even if the Dodgers are down 0-2, I still think they're going to win the series in 4. But yeah, we'll talk to you in a few days. Thanks for listening.